you ever feel like there's never enough time in the day to get to the bottom of your to-do list? Your business just has so many demands and you really need to be able to knock things out in order to grow and scale, but you just can't figure out how? Well, today I'm gonna be talking to Daniel Ramsey, who is the CEO and founder of MyOutDesk, a virtual assistant business. They work with Philippines as well as has some folks in the United States, so it's kind of a hybrid model. And he goes really in depth of what are great tasks and job roles to outsource and how to figure out if it's the right time in your business's life cycle to bring on extra help, and breaking down some of the myths that exist around hiring virtual assistants. It's a really fun episode, and dive really deep into this outsource model of how you can bring on help to essentially grow and scale your company. So without further ado, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Silicon Alley Podcast featuring the Daniel Ramsey. Are you interested in growing and scaling your business? Welcome to the Silicon Alley Podcast, where you'll hear from entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, and top performers on what it truly takes to grow and scale a business. You'll walk away with actionable insights you can apply in your own business and life. Now to William Glass, the CEO and co-founder of Ostrich, and your host of the Silicon Alley Podcast. Daniel, welcome to Silicon Alley Podcast. Super excited to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, William. I'm excited to share the story.
Yeah, I am. I'm excited to hear a little bit more about it. So why don't we dive right in? Do you mind giving the audience just a little background on yourself? You've been in real estate, built a business in the real estate industry, and now have created MyOutDesk, and curious to hear a little bit more background on your journey.
Well, like all good stories, my story starts in Guatemala, of all places, wildly. So we're overlooking a lake. We're in a Francis Ford Coppola resort with my wife. It's 2009. And literally I found myself on, you know, at the bar at 1 a.m. on my honeymoon working. And as an entrepreneur, you know, your audience is entrepreneurs. I'm an entrepreneur. That's kind of the normal scenario. We work. And especially when we're built in build mode, I mean, and I found myself there, the bartender who we got to know over the couple of days that we were there steals my cell phone and then snaps a photo and then starts making fun of me, you know, like dumb white guy, gringo, he's got his money, beautiful bride back in the bungalow. What's wrong with him? You know, and there's howler monkeys in the background, this gorgeous lake. We're in the rainforest. Our room is literally in the trees. So it couldn't have been a more picturesque spot. But in that moment, I realized that something had to shift. I'm that strange kid that ever since I was 8 or 9, I knew that I wanted to own a business, that I wanted to be a business guy. And so what was weird, though, in that moment is I realized my business owned me. And that wasn't my vision. That wasn't what I wanted, you know, in life. So I came back after the honeymoon and repositioned our businesses. At the time, I owned 3 and really focused on building system and process, leadership teams, and really what it would take to grow my own skill set as well as our business.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, appreciate that background, and can see you at the bar in Guatemala. And do you remember what you're doing, answering emails or?
No, I was negotiating a deal, man. It's like one of those things. Like I'm a real estate developer, contractor, and so it was one of those deals that we were hot in the mix, and you know, I'd gotten married 2 days earlier, and you know, it's one of those challenges. And what I realized in that moment was that I didn't have enough people. I didn't have talent. I didn't have the talent that I needed. And one of my, you know, I own a virtual assistant company and we have 2,000 folks. And so every time an entrepreneur comes to us and talks to us about hiring a virtual assistant, you know, we always start with like the end game. Like, what do you want out of life? Right. Cause of that moment, that moment in time for myself kind of changed everything.
Got it. Yeah, I know that makes sense. And did you find yourself like slowly where that happened? Like, did you try to set boundaries? I'm just curious, you know, I mean, this is something that is not unique, right, to your story, entrepreneurs struggling with work-life balance. And, you know, there's different sides of the coin. It's never perfectly balanced from a time perspective, but like, you know, having the dedicated time to spend on your honeymoon or whatever that big event is, like, did you find yourself struggling with that or kind of what was your experience?
You know, it's interesting because I consistently hear entrepreneurs who are like, no, you got to set boundaries and work within a system and, you know, time block and all that. And then I see guys that are like, no, I wake up in the morning and I crush my mornings and then I spend the rest of the afternoon doing whatever I want to do. Right. And so you got these two sides of the coin, very structured folks. And then people who are more, I guess, initiative oriented, where they go after it and they want the goal, right? And I don't think either are wrong. I think your real question is like, how should you be as an entrepreneur? And I can tell you now, after 20 years of being in business, the one thing I wish I would have done differently back then is have a single goal and have a single company and have a single mission and be all in and like pour my heart and soul into that one thing. And you know, at the time I was doing developments, I was a real estate broker at a mortgage company, we were doing investments and at the same time growing my Outdesk. And it was a new industry back in, you know, 2008, when we started, like nobody had heard of virtual assistants. Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek wasn't out. Like that book was the best thing for our business that ever happened, because like it grew our industry. And I was like, hey, Tim, you're a good guy. I like you a lot. You know, people now know what we do. You know, funny enough, William, you'll love this story. I went to a conference and it was the first time that I ever spoke in front of a large audience. There were 10,000 people in the audience and I'm going, I'm like, I'm doing all the things and talking. And the first person that walks up to the mic, she's like, so Daniel, great presentation. I learned a lot, but can you tell me what is a virtual assistant? And I was like, oh gosh, I failed in the basic presentation thing, you know, just so anyways, my point is, I don't think there's the wrong or right way to be in the world. I do think one challenge for an entrepreneur is that, you know, living in structure and kind of tying yourself to the long-term vision was something that I learned later in my career. And I wish I would have had more help up front about creating vision and having one thing to focus on. I think that would have probably changed our growth.
Yeah. And can you expand on that a little bit more, Daniel? Because I think that's a really interesting point. And I'm curious if you're thinking from like an overall life perspective, if it's like, because you had the real estate business, you had My Outdesk. So like, is it like all of those things pointing towards one goal, or is it goals with like, because there's a lot of ways that you could think about setting that goal. And I guess I'm curious how you define that, and so that others can kind of think through it for themselves.
Well, it's a great question. My answer is simple. Have a goal, whatever that goal is, whether it's a revenue goal, whether it's a leadership goal, whether it's an impact goal, you know, have a goal, have a vision, an endpoint, and then pull the rest of the world to that endpoint. That would have been huge for me, you know, 15 years ago when I was starting My Outdesk. And even today, I mean, I have to focus myself like, hey, what was our goal last year? What was the 3-year vision? What's our 10-year vision? And so just continually like making sure that you set the right priorities and you're going after a particular end state. And I think, you know, a lot of people fail to just, you know, have enough time to do that, especially in the entrepreneurial world. So my father-in-law, who's a crazy cowboy, led a pretty big $140 million business. He would schedule time alone in a hotel every quarter. Like he'd check into a hotel and have a date with himself, you know, like take himself out to a steak dinner, and then just write and mind dump. And so many entrepreneurs are time constrained, like I was back on my honeymoon. And so my best advice is just spend some time really getting clear on what the goals are and why those are important and you know, pointing all guns toward that goal.
I love that. Yeah. And so to kind of connect the dots, I think you've talked about two different pieces here, right? And they tie together, is having this goal so that you can focus your time and effort so that you're not doing all of the, you know, 1,000 things that you could be doing, but the like 5, 3, 2, 1 most important thing that you can do that'll make a big impact on that goal. Is that the whole point of having that, is so that you can own your time?
Yeah, I think time is a big deal. And we here at My Outdesk, we practice something called the sticky challenge. So where you will literally just follow yourself around throughout the day. A lot of our clients come to us and we're like, I'm so busy. I need more time. I need to hire somebody. I need help. But when you dive in, they're like, but I'm not sure with what. Or I haven't quite figured out exactly what they will do or what the system is. And so we help people do sticky challenges. And I remember there's a gal, her name was Cody. She was a kind of hard charging entrepreneur, and it was really an honor and a pleasure to help her through this. But she took her entire leadership team and they did a sticky challenge for an entire week where they just followed themselves around with a sticky and wrote down, hey, am I working on dollar productive stuff? Am I working on project things that are going to move the needle someday, but not right now? Or am I doing administrative busy work? And so they would just simply follow themselves around, and you get a time task analysis kind of study. I mean, if you want to pay somebody a lot of money, like a consultant or, you know, a big company to come in and help you, you can do that. Or you could just follow yourself around with stickies. What you do with those stickies afterwards is just simply put them in categories. Like, is this sales? Is this marketing? Is this admin? Is this customer service? Like, what am I doing with my time? And that kind of fundamental understanding of where you're spending your investing, really the most valuable thing we all have, because it's finite. You know, it's finite. It runs out. That's probably one of the best opportunities for entrepreneurs.
Yeah, no, I like that. So just to clarify, make sure that everyone understands the sticky challenge, because I'm not sure that I'm quite there yet. So the idea is that you take a sticky note, and anytime you're doing a task, you just write down what you're doing, and then you just stick it on your desk or wherever, and then you go continue to do what you're going to do. And then every time you switch tasks, or is it like time-based?
Yeah, I mean, it's however you organize your day. My suggestion would be put it on a whiteboard. Right. And also classify the tasks. So this is a podcast for us. This would be an example of marketing for our company. Maybe for you, it's content creation. So whatever the task is, categorize it, put the time that you spent on it, and then throw it on a whiteboard. And what happens over time is you start thinking, okay, in this week, I literally only talked to customers like 5 hours out of a 40-hour work week. Well, gosh, if my goal is to double my business, maybe I need to really focus on talking to more customers, or maybe recruiting more talent to your business, or, you know, whatever the need is at that moment. But the idea is it's a time and task analysis. Any large corporation or any consulting company would charge you hundreds of thousands of dollars to do that for you. You could also, if you're a calendar person, you could go into your calendar and just make sure you're calendaring every single thing that you do throughout the day. And the real advantage is this dollar productive? Meaning, is this driving revenue for my business? Is this making impact? Am I in the process of building an empire? Or am I doing an admin task? Or am I doing something that feels like busy work? Or, you know, is this the most valuable thing with my time? You'll laugh at this, but our best marketing piece is if you don't have an assistant, then you are one.
Yeah, no, I was like, I get it. I see why that's effective. you know, I can think of all the things that I had on my calendar today and things that popped up that I didn't have on that I ended up needing to tackle or felt like I needed to tackle that aren't tied to that, you know, overall goal. So I think I'm going to have to go get some sticky notes after this, this conversation.
There you go.
So talk to me about, okay. So you kind of mentioned that one of the challenges that people face, right, is first figuring out what they need to get help on. They know they need help. I need more time in my business, but I don't know how to organize it. So what's that next step, right? You've kind of got an idea of, you know, here are the areas that I'm spending my time. How do you actually turn that random task list into something where you can go get help from, you know, a virtual assistant?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think there's two things. You take that task list and then you determine, like, am I not doing those things because I don't know how to do them? Or is it really because I don't have time and I have a system and process? So one of the big challenges for entrepreneurs is, you know, meeting customers, recruiting great talent. That's all fun. It's the stuff that we thrive on, people typically. Now, doing a process like writing down an SOP, like a standard operating procedure, and then doing a video explaining how to get it done, and then thinking through all the what if then statements that, you know, you might need for your customer service team or your accounting team, though, that doesn't feel like fun to me. I don't know about you, William, but that does not seem like fun. I like this. I love to talk, you know? So, you know, you go through your list and you start categorizing things into sections. Like, do I have a system and process for it? You know, if it's yes, then you can delegate, meaning you can figure out a way to bring a person in and take that task off my plate. Now, the other kind of consideration is like, do I need a person or should I automate that? Is there a system that I could kind of make this process no longer a process that I have to do or anybody has to do? So the first question is, can I automate this? Can I take this away from the business forever, right? In a system and a process. And if you have a system and a process and you can't automate it, then it's time to hire somebody. And that's really where we come in, is helping our customers kind of determine like what is a virtual assistant task versus what isn't a virtual assistant task, and then create what we call a blended model where, you know, in our case, we have about 30 US employees and about 74 virtual professionals. And that's a blended model where 70% of the doing is done through lower cost, you know, talent options.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense, Daniel. So can you give an example of some of the, I guess, misconceptions that people might have when it comes to virtual assistants and virtual assistants work? Like, I'm sure you get some really interesting questions and conversations.
Yeah. So much fun. You know, where are they is the most common question. We happen to be in the Philippines, so we have 2,000 folks in the Philippines, but how's their English? Are they smart? You know, are they going to steal my data? These are the typical questions. And we've built systems and processes around most of those challenges. Like, we only hire folks that, you know, have perfect English that you and I could talk to and convey ideas and get done, you know, get work done. Right. But I would say the biggest challenge for people when they consider outsourcing is like, well, how would I do it and make it worth my time? Because there is this time constraint, because bringing a new person in and, you know, training them on your systems and process, and then also transferring what I call tribal knowledge. There's tribal knowledge in your business, in your, you know, what you've built, your empire. And you either have to document that or put it into a system and process or put a training manual together. And that just, it costs you time. And so we help people think through what that should look like, what it could look like, and some of the pitfalls, you know, for different things. People, you know, the strategy piece is probably the biggest hump that we help people through. And, you know, that's what's the beautiful thing about being an entrepreneur. My business is not like any other business in the world. So it's, you know, helping people through those intricacies and those different challenges that are either industry-based or location-based or even entrepreneur-based, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes sense, Daniel. And I guess, like, I'm thinking through, like, are there certain areas where virtual assistants really thrive as an option, right? It sounds like you've got to have strategy of time, make sure that it's a, and I know that there's a number of different places that you could seek assistance, right? Because essentially you're hiring another person to the team, right? It's really what you're doing. So it's like, where can we hire somebody and have a good job description? And I think, you know, great points, right? I'm sure those are really common pieces around language and communication and security, but beyond the kind of surface level stuff that you've got to get to when you're hiring somebody just in general, like what is it that really is a great, like, what are some great roles or great times to bring in a virtual assistant, jobs that they can really thrive at and that you've seen really make a big impact on businesses that you've worked with?
Yeah, sure. My favorite one is a director, what I call a director of traffic, which sounds ridiculous, but as you're growing a business in under $1 million, your most important work is client acquisition. Like, without, hands down, that's the game, right? You have to get enough, you have to acquire enough clients to pay the bills and to hire people and to create a business. And so in that space, I love a director of traffic, somebody who's on your CRM, answering calls, setting appointments, nurturing the leads and taking customers in. On top of that, the admin and marketing side of the business, you know, paying the bills, organizing all the projects, you know, keeping your information straight, that's another space that's really impactful. Once you cross that million to $10 million world, you're starting to silo teams. So marketing becomes a thing, sales becomes a thing, customer service becomes a thing. So customer service is another piece that we do a lot of work around. So tech enablement, bringing in somebody to, you know, help implement a tech platform or help, you know, onboard their customers. That's a huge area that we serve. Once you get above that 10 million, now you're starting to create leadership teams and you're starting to silo the groups and really put an entire team together. We fill marketing, admin, customer service, and sales roles. Those are our four primary spaces. Okay. And, you know, our ideal client are growing companies that need access to talent. Here's a crazy stat for your audience. Right now, there are two jobs for every one job seeker out there. Like, imagine that. And like, I've never met a CEO who says, Daniel, I'm cool. My talent is good. I don't need any help, right? Every growing business that you've ever talked to the CEO, their number one concern is, you know, how's my team doing? Like, what's my retention look like? And then how am I going to get the talent on my team that I need to grow? And so that's what we do, is we help companies, whether they're small or large, really augment their talent and free up the time of the team to work on the most valuable work, while we'll take away the administrative, marketing, sales, or customer service tasks so that the business can thrive and grow.
I love that. Yeah, I love that, Daniel. Makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate you breaking down some of the areas where you tend to support depending on the stage of the company you're at. Now, when you look across vertical industries, is there anything there that's interesting? Like, do you see any particular types of companies that tend to, you know, really thrive? Like you mentioned real estate, that was obviously your background. You know, just curious to see if there's any nuances within industries that people should think about as well.
No, you know, it's wild, is every industry, and there was a long time where I didn't really understand this, but I mean, we have a boat broker in Florida of all places. We have a medical device company. You know, the other day we onboarded a psychologist to the company. So we have like everything from small brand new startups to, you know, one of our biggest clients, Gutter Glove. They just submitted all their paperwork for best places to work for all. And our virtual assistants, they have 12, were part of that survey. And so it's a really interesting, you know, dynamic to watch these and they're a very fast growing manufacturer. So what's interesting is, as we've grown the company and grown the different industries that we've kind of dove into, the constant across all of them is that there's a constraint in talent right now. And yeah, everybody needs to grow their talent base in order to meet demand and kind of at the same time stay profitable.
Absolutely. Yep. I can echo that sentiment. Definitely something that we're struggling with at Ostrich as well, is getting the right people on, and yeah, it's hard to find folks. So definitely an interesting market that we're in talent wise. Now, Daniel, I want to kind of get back to your story, right? Like you mentioned at the very beginning that setting that goal, right, that one kind of thing that you're driving towards, was really impactful in what you would have told yourself 20 years ago. So what is that? I'm curious, what is that one thing that drives you today?
That's a great question. Right now, we're really focused on impacting the world. So MyOutDesk has a nonprofit and it's called the Mod Movement. And I'm really excited about the work that we're doing. We have over 200 of our customers actually as contributors to our movement. We've done things like build orphanages, build housing, really help people with education and just the basics. Once you strip away the money goal, because everybody wants to hit a certain revenue once they become an entrepreneur. But once you kind of get to what your goal is, then you start looking around and you say, well, I wonder how I could make change or impact the world or do some good. And so one of the tenets of our business is that we like to impact the world in a positive way. And so we're doing that through our nonprofit and bringing opportunities to a lot of people, as well as allowing our customers to be involved in that nonprofit. And it's really cool to have 200 contributors every single month to our nonprofit, and then being able to take that money out into the world and do positive things.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Daniel. And is that work primarily focused in the Philippines where you have team? No? Okay.
No, in fact, our whole mission is to impact the world. And one of the things that's different, most nonprofits, they spend a certain dollar amount administering their nonprofit, meaning there's overhead and all that. 100% of everything that we do goes back into impacting the world. And we prefer to do projects that have lifespans, meaning, you know, when we built a, when we built our orphanage, you know, it housed 50 children and it has an expected life of 40 years. So for 40 years, we're going to help 50 children, you know, 50 kids, right? And so for us, that's a big impact. And so we measure by lives impacted, dollars contributed, and the time that we invest to make these kind of change projects happen. And it's just a cool thing. We go where the opportunity is biggest, actually.
Got it. Okay. So yeah. So as you said, global. So there's opportunities. How do you find those opportunities, right? Are you, I mean, no overhead, or I mean, I guess the overhead is absorbed, right? You're probably operating that out of my out desk. So like, how do you find the opportunities though? Cause you know, global opportunity is global opportunity. So it could be anything and everything.
Yeah. I mean, we built some houses in Central America last year. This year, we're building a house for a family in Philadelphia. The orphanage was in the Philippines. We've done an old folks home. We primarily source from our folks. So the people in the MOD movement, as well as the virtual professionals in the Philippines that do the work. So whether it's our clients, like the house in Philadelphia that we're currently in construction for right now, that was sourced by one of our customers and one of the contributors to the MOD movement. So it's a cool, I mean, the thing is, what we want to do is make sure that the money is actually being spent appropriately. And so we tend to go with people that we know and trust, you know, because it's stewardship, right? If somebody gives you, you know, $50,000 to make impact, you want to make sure that $50,000 goes to making that impact. So it's a big deal. And I take a very personal role in making sure that we're actually doing good work.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Just as a contributor, you also have the opportunity to help decide where the funds go and what's being supported. So that's awesome. That's fantastic. Yeah. So we talked about the business goal. How would you say your work-life balance is now? Are you still working at 1 a.m. On the anniversary trips?
Yeah, it's wild all over the place. And if you ever interview somebody and say they have it all figured out, I'd be like, I don't know about that. That guy's not really trustworthy. You know, what I do is I track. So I'm a big proponent of tracking time spent on the business and also, you know, with my family. So I'm a father of three beautiful daughters. We spend a lot of time together. My middle child the other day, I was asking her for some feedback and she's six and she's like, "Oh no, dad, you're a wonderful father. In fact, you're great." And I was like, "Okay, score," right? So one of our tenets as a business, and I've just kind of embodied this, is feedback is the breakfast of champions. And so, you know, I'm measuring how I'm doing personally, how I'm doing with my finances, how the business is doing, what impact I'm making. And we just kind of keep score of that every quarter, every month. And, you know, everything from my wife. I mean, I even asked my wife for feedback, like, how am I doing as a husband this week? Like, is there anything that you need to support me or I can support you in? Like, where are we at? And I think as an entrepreneur, a lot of the tenets that work in business can be translated into life. And there are seasons. Right now, I'm going through a great family, you know, impact business season. But that all could shift. The pandemic back in 2020, you know, March and April and May wasn't a great time for us. It was not a good time for our business. It wasn't a good time for our employees. And we had a couple of challenging quarters in that time frame. We're on an upswing right now. And now the interest rates and inflation, who knows what's going to happen? And, you know, I'll just say for now, things are going well.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, who knows, right? There are some large companies that are cutting people right now or have hiring freezes. So who knows, to your point, what'll happen. But
I would add one thing. I can tell you as an entrepreneur, your personal world like has to be very forgiving. It has to, you know, if you have a wife or a spouse who's not on board for being married to an entrepreneur, watch out. That could be a challenge. I mean, there are times, you know, that I am head down working, you know, 12, 14 hours a day. And, you know, there are times when I'm like, okay, today, not a lot going on. I can put in 4 hours and feel good about it. But you have to have an understanding personal life, stay in the gym, you know, make sure you're healthy, eat right, know that there's stress. I mean, I'll tell you, from brand new to business Daniel to today Daniel, I have a lot more support structure in place, and I'm buying a lot of the things that makes my life better. I see a therapist, you know, twice a month. I see a spirit coach twice a month. I'm in two different business mentorship programs where we have a peer group. Each are valuable for different reasons. There's just a lot of support that if I could go back in time and provide to myself, oh man, that would have been fantastic. But you know, it's funny. I tell people that you learn by falling down. It's either going to hurt your heart or hurt your wallet. And that's how entrepreneurs learn. And I think that's how people learn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I like the idea of getting all of those different support systems in place. So needed, something that I'm definitely working on still, and have had the opportunity to be a part of some different entrepreneurship groups. And those have been great. Missed those for the first, you know, 2 years, would have liked those sooner. But I think to your point, it's really important to have support in all of these different facets of your life. A few questions. My focus with Ostrich is improving global financial well-being. And, you know, financial is just the adjective for well-being, because I believe finance is a big part of determining our well-being, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. And I'm curious how you would describe your relationship with money and how it might have changed as an entrepreneur.
Oh my gosh, what a great question. I know in the beginning, I saw money as a scarcity. Like it wasn't as much as a tool. Today I see it as a tool, much like, you know, a wrench if you're working on a car, or a shovel if you need to dig a ditch. And I think when you're new to building business, you view money as a scarcity. And so you'll cut corners and or make decisions based on what's the cheapest way or what's the easiest and least expensive way. And I just remember a lot of the decisions that I made about talent and a lot of the decisions I made about the systems and processes that we built and, you know, the infrastructure and all the things that I did early on that were out of a scarcity mindset with money. And it was all because I grew up poor. I mean, I grew up in a trailer. For those of you who, you know, can identify, there's a lot of entrepreneurs like me, grew up poor, grew up in a trailer, decided business was the way out, started buying candy bars and selling them on the bus. I mean, this is my life story, which probably a lot of listeners couldn't identify with. And so when I finally got some level of success with money and had money in the bank, I was like, whoa, you mean I don't have to go the cheapest route? I mean, I don't have to cut corners. I don't have to do it myself. And that's a pretty freeing understanding. Today, I view money in a completely different way. I view it as a scoreboard, as if you're playing any sport. I view it as a tool to be properly stewarded and shepherded in. I also know it's not my best asset. That's the other thing that's new too in my leadership. I thought money could solve problems, and it's never the money. No matter how much you have or how much you don't have, it's typically not the solution to the problem. It's some thing inside of you that you have to work through, or something inside of your own heart that you're kind of working through in terms of trauma or woundings from your childhood. And that's new for me. And so realizing that money isn't the most important thing and can't solve all the problems, that's a new reality for me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And, you know, appreciate you opening it up there. And there's so many different ways, and you hear money as a tool, and, you know, people will say that, but I think, you know, there's a difference between understanding that, or there's a difference between saying it and really understanding it.
Yes.
That I think is a disconnect. And this is something that I'm reflecting my own experience from, like, oh, money's a tool. But like, there's a difference when you start to make the real connection, you know, the real, you actually see that and apply it, that I think is really powerful and can really change the way that you, as an entrepreneur, your business runs and your life runs, and, you know, getting the support where maybe you are a part of a group or you pay for therapy and all these things that before would be like, ah, I don't know if I can afford that or I need that, but it really does add value and is worth the dollar amount, right? The cost.
The investment is actually, you know, it's interesting too, and this might be good for your audience. It's wild how much money I thought I would save by not investing in myself. And so I think that's one big difference too is, you know, I invest a lot in my own growth, and wildly enough, the business kind of grows as I've grown. And it's interesting how many entrepreneurs I meet that are like, oh no, I did it all on my own, or no, I didn't build that, or no, I just figured out myself. And I think, well, wow, I wonder how much further along this person would have been had they got the support that they probably needed along the way. And so, you know, that one question, if I could, you know, change anybody's, invest early, invest deeply in yourself and know your areas of opportunity. This is actually what differentiates successful people and not successful, is that ability to self-reflect. Hit an obstacle, reflect why, what's the first principle reason that you actually hit that obstacle? What was the cause of it? And then create a plan to overcome that obstacle and then go out and execute it. People that do that typically have high levels of success.
Yeah, self-awareness is key. Daniel, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you sitting down. I want to leave you with the last word. So if there's anything that you'd like to share with the audience that we haven't covered or any other piece of advice, I'll give you the stage, as well as please let everyone know how they can connect with you outside of this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Jump on our website, myoutdesk.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm very open and I love meeting new people. It's the one thing in our business that I still get excitement and joy about, seeing entrepreneurs, the light bulb go off and go, oh my gosh, this is an opportunity. So jump on our website, grab a copy of our book. We have a best-selling book, an international best-selling book, helping people think through ways of growing their business with virtual professionals or virtual assistants. We call them professionals, by the way, because we hire professionals. Imagine that.
Yes.
and, you know, I, because of your space and where you are, I would just invite people to really take that, you know, date themselves, go book yourself a little half day in a hotel, you know, get clear about that vision and who you need on your team and what the world could look like if you weren't the only one doing all the work. I love the metaphor, no billionaire buys a sports team and then thinks that they're going to run the sports team themselves, right? The very first thing is they buy the team and then they go, who do I need as my manager to win the Super Bowl or whatever it is, right? And I would invite people that are listening to this to do the same thing. Like, what's your Super Bowl and who do you need? And I think that could be game changer.
I like that. Yeah, what's your Super Bowl? And what's the team you need around you?
Yep.
Well, Daniel, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you sitting down.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure.
On your way out, please share the podcast with others. It's the only way that the community grows and others hear these incredible stories from entrepreneurs and top performers. And of course, pound that subscribe button so you get notified when episodes drop every Friday. I'm William Glass, CEO and co-founder of Ostrich, and of course, your host of the Silicon Alley Podcast. Have a very profitable day.
You got no time to waste, but still you hesitate, caught in a circle saying I'll never